Part 2, The Founder's Basic Principles. First Principle, the only reliable basis for sound government and just human relations is natural law. Most modern Americans have never studied natural law. They are therefore mystified by the constant reference to natural law by the Founding Fathers. Blackstone confirmed the wisdom of the Founders by stating that it is the only reliable basis for a stable society and a system of justice. Then what is natural law? A good place to seek out the answer is in the writings of one of the American Founders' favorite authors, Marcus Tullius Cicero. The Life and Writings of Cicero. It was Cicero who cut sharply through the political astigmatism and philosophical errors of both Plato and Aristotle to discover the touchstone for good laws, sound government, and the long-range formula for happy human relations. In the Founder's roster of great political thinkers, Cicero was high on the list. Dr. William Ebenstein of Princeton says, quote, "The only Roman political writer who has exercised enduring influence throughout the ages is Cicero, 106 to 43 BC. Cicero studied law in Rome and philosophy in Athens. He became the leading lawyer of his time and also rose to the highest office of state, Roman consul. Yet his life was not free of sadness. Only 5 years after he had held the highest office in Rome, the consulate, he found himself in exile for a year. Cicero nevertheless showed considerable personal courage in opposing the drift toward dictatorship based on popular support. Caesar was assassinated in 44 BC, and a year later, in 43 BC, Cicero was murdered by the henchmen of Antony, a member of the triumvirate set up after Caesar's death." End of quote. So out of Cicero's maelstrom of turbulent experience with political politics, plus his intense study of all forms of political systems, he wrote his landmark books on the Republic and the laws. In these writings, Cicero projected the grandeur and promise of some future society based on natural law. The American Founding Fathers obviously shared a profound appreciation of Cicero's dream because they envisioned just such a commonwealth of prosperity and justice for themselves and their posterity. They saw in Cicero's writings the necessary ingredients for their model society, which they eventually hoped to build. Cicero's Fundamental Principles. To Cicero, the building of a society on principles of natural law was nothing more nor less than recognizing and identifying the rules of right conduct with the laws of the supreme creator of the universe. History demonstrates that even in those nations sometimes described as pagan, there were sharp, penetrating minds like Cicero's who reasoned their way through the labyrinths of natural phenomena to see behind the cosmic universe as well as the unfolding of their own lives the brilliant intelligence of a supreme designer with an ongoing interest in both human and cosmic affairs. Cicero's compelling honesty led him to conclude that once the reality of the Creator is clearly identified in the mind, the only intelligent approach to government, justice, and human relations is in terms of the laws which the Supreme Creator had already established. The Creator's order of things is called natural law. A fundamental presupposition of natural law is that man's reasoning power is a special dispensation of the Creator and is closely akin to the rational or reasoning power of the Creator himself. In other words, man shares with his Creator this quality of utilizing a rational approach to solving problems, and the reasoning of the mind will generally lead to common sense conclusions based on what Jefferson called the laws of nature and of nature's God. Let us now examine the major precepts of natural law, which so profoundly impressed the founding fathers. Natural law is eternal and universal. First of all, Cicero defines natural law as true law. Then he says, quote, "True law is right reason in agreement with nature. It is of universal application, unchanging and everlasting. It summons to duty by its commands, and averts from wrongdoing by its prohibitions. It is a sin to try to alter this law, nor is it allowable to repeal any part of it, and it is impossible to abolish it entirely. We cannot be freed from its obligations by senate or people, and we need not look outside ourselves for an expounder or interpreter of it. And there will not be different laws at Rome and at Athens, or different laws now and in the future, but one eternal and unchangeable law will be valid for all nations and all times. And there will be one master and ruler, that is God, over us all, for he is the author of this law, its promulgator and its enforcing judge. Whoever is disobedient is fleeing from himself and denying his human nature, and by reason of this very fact, he will suffer the worst punishment." End of quote. In these few lines, the student encounters concepts which were repeated by the American founders 1,000 times. The law of nature or nature's God is eternal in its basic goodness. It is universal in its application. It is a code of right reason from the Creator Himself. It cannot be altered. It cannot be repealed. It cannot be abandoned by legislators or the people themselves, even though they may pretend to do so. In natural law, we are dealing with factors of absolute reality. It is basic in its principles, comprehensible to the human mind, and totally correct and morally right in its general operation. To the founding fathers, as well as to Blackstone, John Locke, Montesquieu, and Cicero, this was a monumental discovery. The gift of reason. To Cicero, it was an obvious and remarkable thing that man had been endowed with a rich quality of mind that does not exist among other forms of life except in the most minuscule proportions. Between man and other creatures, there is a gigantic gap insofar as mental processes are concerned. Cicero, as well as the founders, viewed this as a special divine endowment from the Creator. Cicero wrote, quote, "The animal which we call man, endowed with foresight and quick intelligence, complex, keen, possessing memory, full of reason and prudence, has been given a certain distinguished status by the supreme God who created him. For he is the only one among so many different kinds and varieties of living beings who has a share in reason and thought, while all the rest are deprived of it. But what is more divine, I will not say, in man only, but in all heaven and earth, than reason. And reason, when it is full grown and perfected, is rightly called wisdom. Therefore, since there is nothing better than reason, and since it exists both in man and God, the first common possession of man and God is reason. But those who have reason in common must also have right reason in common. And since right reason is law, we must believe that men have law also in common with the gods. Further, those who share law must also share justice. And those who share these are to be regarded as members of the same commonwealth. If indeed they obey the same authorities and powers, this is true in a far greater degree. But as a matter of fact, they do obey this celestial system, the divine mind, and the God of transcendent power. Hence, we must now conceive of this whole universe as one commonwealth of which both gods and men are members. End of quote. No prophet of the Old Testament or the gospel teachers of the New Testament ever said it any better. The first great commandment. Cicero had comprehended the magnificence of the first great commandment to love, respect, and obey the all-wise Creator. He put this concept in proper perspective by saying that God's law is right reason. When perfectly understood, it is called wisdom. When applied by government in regulating human relations, it is called justice. When people unite together in a covenant or compact under this law, they become a true commonwealth, and since they intend to administer their affairs under God's law, they belong to His commonwealth. Thus Cicero came to what Jews and Christians call the first great commandment. It will be recalled that a lawyer tried to discredit Jesus by asking him, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" Of course, there were hundreds of commandments, and the question was designed as a clever stratagem to embarrass Jesus. But Jesus was not embarrassed. He simply replied, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment." The lawyer was amazed by this astute and ready response from the Galilean carpenter. But Jesus was not through. He added, "And the second is likened to it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." The astonished lawyer simply replied, "Well, Master, thou hast said the truth." Jesus had picked out what he considered to be the foremost commandment from Deuteronomy 6:4-5, and then selected what he considered to be the second most important commandment clear over in Leviticus 19:18. The second great commandment. It is interesting that Cicero, without being either a Christian or a Jew, was able to discover the power and fundamental significance of obedience, not only to the first great commandment, but to the second one as well. His mind instinctively led him to comprehend the beauty and felicity of what Jesus had identified as the second great commandment, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Dr. William Ebenstein comments on this rather fascinating insight among Cicero's writings by saying, quote, "There is another note, too, in Cicero that points forward toward Christianity rather than backward to Plato and Aristotle. Cicero's consciousness of love as a mighty social bond," end of quote. Cicero raises this point in connection with his discussion of justice. He points out that justice is impossible except under the principles of God's just law. Quote, "For these virtues originate in our natural inclination to love our fellow men, and this is the foundation of justice." End of quote. So to Cicero, the glue which holds the body of human beings together in the commonwealth of a just society is love. Love of God, love of God's great law of justice, and love of one's fellow man, which provides the desire to promote true justice among mankind. All mankind can be taught God's law or virtue. Cicero projected throughout his writings a particularly optimistic view of the potential improvement of human beings by teaching them the elements of virtue through education. He wrote, quote, "Out of all the material of the philosopher's discussion, surely there comes nothing more valuable than the full realization that we are born for justice, and the right is based not upon men's opinion, but upon nature. This fact will immediately be plain if you once get a clear conception of man's fellowship and union with his fellow men. However we may define man, a single definition will apply to all. This is a sufficient proof that there is no difference in kind between man and man. In fact, there is no human being of any race who, if he finds a guide, cannot attain to virtue." End of quote. Legislation in violation of God's natural law is a scourge to humanity. We cannot complete our review of Cicero's discourse on natural law without including his warning against legislators who undertake to pass laws which violate the laws of nature and of nature's God. Cicero wrote, quote, "But the most foolish notion of all is the belief that everything is just which is found in the customs or laws of nations. What of the many deadly, the many pestilential statutes which nations put in force? These no more deserve to be called laws than the rules a band of robbers might pass in their assembly. For if ignorant and unskillful men have prescribed deadly poisons instead of healing drugs, these cannot possibly be called physicians' prescriptions. Neither in a nation can a statute of any sort be called a law, even though the nation, in spite of being a ruinous regulation, has accepted it." End of quote. All law should be measured against God's law. Cicero then set forth the means by which people may judge between good and evil laws. All laws must be measured by God's law, which is described by Cicero as follows, quote, "Therefore, law of the Creator is the distinction between things just and unjust, made in agreement with that primal and most ancient of all things, nature. And in conformity to nature's standard are framed those human laws which inflict punishment upon the wicked and protect the good." End of quote. Cicero also emphasizes that the essence of an evil law cannot be mended through ratification by the legislature or by popular acclaim. Justice can never be expected from laws arbitrarily passed in violation of standards set up under the laws of nature or the laws of the Creator. Here is his argument. Quote, "But if the principles of justice were founded on the decrees of people, the edicts of princes, or the decisions of judges, then justice would sanction robbery and adultery and forgery of wills, in case these acts were approved by the votes or decrees of the populace. But if so great a power belongs to the decisions and decrees of fools that the laws of nature can be changed by their votes, then why do they not ordain that which is bad and baneful shall be considered good and salutary? Or if a law can make justice injustice, can it not also make good out of bad?" End of quote. Cicero's conclusion. It was clear to Cicero as he came toward the close of his life that men must eliminate the depravity that had lodged itself in society. He felt they must return to the high road of natural law. They must pledge obedience to the mandates of a loving and concerned Creator. What promise of unprecedented grandeur awaited that future society which would undertake it? He wrote, quote, As one and the same nature holds together and supports the universe, all of whose parts are in harmony with one another, so men are united in nature, but by reason of their depravity they quarrel, not realizing that they are of one blood and subject to one and the same protecting power. If this fact were understood, surely men would live a life of the gods. End of quote. The American founders believed this. They embraced the obvious necessity of building a high moral and virtuous society. The founders wanted to lift mankind from the common depravity and chicanery of past civilizations, and to lay the foundation for a new kind of civilization built on freedom for the individual and prosperity for the whole commonwealth. This is why they built their system on natural law. Let us consider a few examples. Examples of natural law. It may be surprising even to Americans to discover how much of their constitution and their lifestyle is based on principles of natural law. For example, the concept of inalienable rights is based on natural law. 22 of these inalienable rights are listed on pages 125 and 126. The concept of inalienable duties is based on natural law. 20 of these inalienable duties are listed on pages 134 and 35. The concept of habeas corpus is based on natural law. The concept of limited government is based on natural law. The concept of separation of powers is based on natural law. The concept of checks and balances to correct abuses by peaceful means is based on natural law. The right of self-preservation is based on natural law. The right to contract is based on natural law. Laws protecting the family and the institution of marriage are all based on natural law. The concept of justice by reparation or paying for damages is based on natural law. The right to bear arms is based on natural law. The principle of no taxation without representation is based on natural law. These few examples will illustrate how extensively the entire American constitutional system is grounded in natural law. In fact, natural law is the foundation and encompassing framework for everything we have come to call people's law. This is precisely what Thomas Jefferson was talking about when he wrote the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These well-remembered phrases from America's initial Charter of Liberty are all primary presuppositions under the principles of natural law. Now, having covered the highlights of the founders' first fundamental precept, let us proceed to the second.